So happy to be back.
I'm happy you are back, buddy. Boom. Hit it. Hey, everybody. Howie Mandel here. This is Howie Mandel Does Stuff. I'm sitting here with the lovely...
Jacqueline Schultz,
no,
your daughter.
I was talking about Lou. Lou Dinos. And you're also here, Jacqueline Schultz, my co-host, my daughter, and my illustrious guest on this episode.
Illustrious?
What?
Illustrious?
Are you illustrious, Rob?
It felt good. I don't know why she questioned it. It felt good.
Well, you know, it's funny. Rob Dyrdek is here, but I heard Lou talking to him before the show, and you said, glad to have you back, Mr.
Dryden.
Dry dick.
Yeah. And believe it or not,
be respectful.
What?
Look, believe it or not,
Mister.
As odd as it is, because the name is DYR, a lot of people's brains refuse to believe that's how it would be spelled, so they flip the Y and the R automatically.
You know, you said it wrong, Lou.
Oh, I did not know that. How do I say it?
No. Let him say it that way, Mister Dry Dick.
Yes, and look, I'm so used to it, I took it with the same amount of joy as I would just a normal pronunciation.
To even the score,
he wasn't even trying to be funny. I think that he legitimately thought it was your name, and the fact that I commented on how he said your name, he was commenting on the fact I called him Mister because I wanted to
be respectful.
Yeah.
And to even the score, he can call me Lou.
No, but you don't understand. If you want to be respectful, it's not the Mister. It's pronouncing his name correctly.
Yeah.
Look, what makes it respectful.
But when you spend 47 years of mispronunciations, you just roll with it. I took the Mister. It felt good.
Yeah. Well, you
felt respectful.
But what did you do with the dry dick?
I mean, look, you can't do much with it.
Did people used to call you that?
No. Primarily, Dear Dick.
Dear Dick.
Dick. Since it's said Dear Deck, like it would be. So I get memes all the time. It's like, zoom in. And as you like, it's like a deer. And as you zoom in, then it's just like me as the dick.
That's better. That's better than we had Tony Hawk.
Jeremy will have that on.
Yeah, go ahead. It's a great one.
But what were you talking about?
I was going to say that's better, though, than we had Tony Hawk on here, and he told us that kids used to call him Bony Cock. That was his name.
Yeah, that so. It flows, though.
But
you know what I mean? When it
deer
flows.
Deer dick is better.
Deer don't have dick, right?
Yes, they do.
No, they don't.
Those.
This would be getting beyond my nature ability, but I assume they procreate with something that is at least...
No, but isn't a deer the female deer?
That's a doe.
Doe. A doe deck.
No, but isn't
that... Oh, man, I'm going to start changing my... Like, any female in the family
deer,
has to be a doe deck.
A female
deck.
Deer?
A doe is a female deer.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, but a deer does have a dick.
Yeah. They can.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, let's move on to more important things. Rob, I'm
but
so
is there anything more important than the deer and the dick?
No.
Yeah.
Is that your philosophy? I got to tell you, Rob, that you are probably one of the most surprising people I ever met. And I met you by accident. Those people who listen or watch our podcast will know that I went and we use it now as our promo, knocking on the door of your... television show. You just work next door, and ridiculousness. And I said, you want to come next door and do the podcast? And you were gracious enough to say yes.
Yeah.
And you showed up. And you know, that's what I knew you from. I knew you from as a skater. I know you from MTV.
Yeah.
I knew nothing about you.
Yeah.
And then I learned in the 10 minutes or 15 minutes that you were on the show that you are this amazing kind of productive philosopher of life and business, and that just blew me away. Who is, and I don't want to embarrass you, but you know, you're worth hundreds of millions of dollars. I don't think that's embarrassing. Are you proud of that?
I am, actually. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. With not a formal education, which
quit high school.
I know. And you kind of explained to us that your mother, even though you end up on CNBC and business shows talking about, you know, how one could maybe follow in these footsteps. She goes, you have to say you quit high school? That's embarrassing. But Mom, I got hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
That was a great story. But when did you, as a kid, what did you aspire to do? Obviously, you aspired to be a skater. You left and went to Europe. Do you have a plan?
Yeah, I mean, I think early on it was like really ambitious, just sort of locked in on like, I'm going to be a professional skateboarder and move to California. Right. That was like the plan from like 13 on. And I think I just got so committed and got so good and that, you know, I was validated. Right. So even though it was a dream, I kept getting validated. I would get sponsored. Then I would.
But you said
really
your first sponsorship was what? Your first sponsorship was not money.
No.
Not real money.
No. You're just being like, you get free product. You know what I mean? You got to understand. When I turned pro, I still made only the boards that I sold. And I only sold one board my first year of being a pro skateboarder in December. And I got a check for $2. You know what
I mean?
Wow. I was guaranteed $1,000 a month to move to California when I was 17. And I felt like I had won the lottery. It was like, wait, what? Guaranteed $1,000 a month? I'm out of here. Moved to San Diego, rich when I got there.
Were you able to live at $1,000 a month?
Yeah, I mean, look, to give you more context to my mother's sort of point of view of this whole thing, I moved in with these four girls, and when I told my mom,
oh, wow, already.
I got like, hey, I got this amazingly cheap apartment, I'm moving in with these four girls. She's like, oh my God, you're gonna have AIDS. Swear to God, first reaction, right? I'm like, AIDS? Like, what? Like, what are we talking about here? You know what I mean? Like, that was, you know.
Who are these four girls?
I was actually a friend of mine's that was a pro skateboarder's sister, and her room, or sister and all her roommates had an extra room. So that's who I ended up moving out with.
Do you know these girls today?
Oh man, I haven't seen them in years. I probably wouldn't even recognize them if I even saw them. I mean, we're talking, you know, if I was 17, so 30 years ago, man.
You don't remember anybody from 30 years ago? Your mother, you've known for 47.
I mean, look, and I still got to put together some of those memories. You know, it's, but yeah, no, I don't. I kind of have a little bit, but I almost look at like my, I've done so much and I do so much that I have to specifically focus on retaining moments that I know I want to carry forever so that I'm hyper aware of it. Because otherwise, I'm just living at such a pace that I will tend to, which is a gift and a curse, forget about a lot of things from the past. You know?
So, well, and we'll talk about that a little later. That's why you bought a time machine.
Yeah.
So you can go back and remember those moments.
Wait, I want to ask you something, though. You were saying that you kept moving forward with skateboarding because you were getting the validation, whether it was just the sponsorships or $1,000 to move out here. If you didn't get that validation, do you think you would have continued skateboarding? It wasn't just something that you wanted to do regardless of what happened?
Well, I think it's still, it's the passion. Your goal is to become a professional skateboarder, right? There's sort of these steps that have to happen, right? You have to be validated by a skate shop. I got sponsored by the skate shop. Then you need to be validated by a factory company and be sponsored by a factory company. Then you've got to perform in contests, and then they have to eventually invite you to turn pro, right? That's sort of the process. So if you can imagine all that happened between age 11 and 16, and if somewhere along that way, along that route, like, even though this is my dream and my passion, like, would I have continued doing it if I didn't get it validated? Like, I don't know. It's hard to say because you're in Ohio. You feel the pressure of like, oh, you should go to school. You gotta build an education. You gotta figure out what your career is. You know, I like to say I grew up in a fixed mindset household with a fixed mindset. Went to a fixed mindset school. It with fixed mindset parents where it's like you have one route to like find a successful life and you have to break out of that when you're a young child. You know.
But or not, you know,
yeah, or like be in Ohio, making my mom so happy that I'm like, you know,
but you could be in Ohio and have a great job as an accountant. And do, there are people that are satisfied with that. And then I'm always fascinated by the people who aren't fascinated or aren't content. I'm using the wrong word, who aren't content with whatever that path is.
Yeah.
So you broke that path. You're here and you're getting $1,000 a month. You're living with four girls. Avoiding AIDS.
Yeah.
What's the next step?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think at that point it really began to accelerate because when I got, I had lived in Ohio up to that point and I had built sort of a reputation, but it wasn't till I was in the epicenter of the skate culture in San Diego did the industry sort of take note of like, wow, this guy's really talented. Let's steal him from this company in Ohio. Because I turned pro for a company that was based out of Informed in Dayton, Ohio, right? So that's,
there's a skateboard company in Dayton, Ohio.
Look, to believe it or not, it was only the company that I was sponsored by in GNS in San Diego. The guys who ran it moved back to Dayton, Ohio because there was a skateboarding distribution company there, and they formed the Alien Workshop. I helped name it when I was 16 years old because of the Project Blue Book of reengineering alien technology and little alien workshops. And Hangar 18 in Dayton, Ohio is why we called it the Alien Workshop. And that is who I turned pro for in this small upstart startup in Dayton, Ohio. And so when I got to California, all the big companies in California tried to buy me away.
Who was giving you $1,000 to move to California?
Alien Workshop, yeah. They committed to giving me $1,000.
And why San Diego? I know Tony Hawk's from San Diego, but I would think the epicenter for skateboarding was either Venice or Marina Del Rey.
Yeah, right? I mean, I think Los Angeles was a little too spread out, almost like all of the core companies in skateboarding were either in San Francisco or in San Diego, almost all of them. So it was much more, even though LA eventually went on to like grow into like a skate capital, at that time it was still San Diego or San Francisco.
Really?
But yeah. Wasn't Z-Boys and Dogtown stuff, they were like
Venice and Marina Del Rey.
That's like, so if it was born here, the industry didn't grow here the same way, right? Like for some reason, for whatever reason, and it's funny, like even as you question me right now, I'm like, why is this? how did that happen? They invented it in Venice.
Right.
But yeah, like for whatever reason, I just think as, it's the type of people that were involved in it. Tended to kind of clump together, and it's a very skater owned and driven sort of world where the actual skaters connected with business people and built skateboard companies in the early industry. And I think because they were all in the same area, they kind of helped each other, if you will. I think that's why San Diego specifically got so big.
So you're moving out to San Diego, you're living with four ladies, you're getting $1,000 a month.
The first thing I did, I bought a brand new Honda Civic.
Wow.
Man, crazy buyer's remorse when I left the lot. I'm like, this is $284 a month. What am I doing?
Oh, wait, you bought it and on time.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. A Honda Civic, 284. It felt good?
Felt good.
Yeah.
My first excessive purchase, a little over my skis, you know.
Good on gas, I'm betting, these days,
well,
right?
I mean,
if I can just say, to save money today, I walked to the Chevron.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It really does. So now you bought a car, and then what is the goal in your mind? Because I'm fascinated with how your mind works, and we'll get into like the philosophies, but you're still a young guy. Do you ever feel like, okay, and you drive off the lot and you go, I've arrived. This is what I want to do for the rest of my life. Do you have a path at that point? Do you have a mindset like, okay, I'm here, but this is what I want to do? Because you said, I want to be a pro skater. I want to leave Ohio. You're a pro skater. You left Ohio. You got a car. You're getting a paycheck. What do you want to do with that?
Well, you got to understand, I the other side of my life is I was raised by entrepreneurs, right? So the guy who started the Alien Workshop was a 19-year-old serial entrepreneur who owned the skate shop that I made a call to when I was 11 years old, who had a ramp in the backyard and said, if I get 10 people to pay, can I skate for free? And he's like, what? Like, why don't you just come down here? We'll let you skate. And
who is this person?
His name is Jimmy George. And then I skated that ramp, and he was the first person to be like, if that's the first time you skated a ramp, then you have a lot of potential. I didn't know what the word meant, but they sponsored me by the skate shop right there, from a cold call to being allowed to skate for free to skating once to then them sponsoring me on the spot. So that's really when
skated a ramp before?
Never. And because there was no ramps in Ohio, that was the only one.
So you were a street skater.
Right. Street skater. And really, even those are mini ramps, so not like Tony Hawk style ramps. But if you can imagine, then I watched him start company after company. Then when I turned pro, it was for the Alien Workshop, where they all came back and built a company with him. So I thought, really, the first thing I was going to do is start a company. So no sooner did I move to San Diego than I put together the five best skateboarders in the world and came up with a concept called Orion Aluminum. And then I went to one of the local manufacturers in San Diego and pitched them this concept of building a company with me, and that I had these five best skateboarders in the world that would be on the team. And that's when I launched my first company at 17.
So what was that? And that's called what?
Orion Aluminum. It was a truck company, like the skateboard truck.
Just the truck, just like the wheels underneath.
No wheels, just the metal part that hold the wheels and goes to the wood, like the accessory, if you will. So that was like the very first, because in my mind, I watched all these people create all these companies all these years.
But weren't they just skateboard companies where you buy a skateboard? Like,
They're fashion brands, and some were clothing brand, or some were skateboard brands. There was a skate shop. I watched them do skateboard contests. Like,
but just the truck seems to be so myopic. It's so like, and that makes a difference in the ride? Like, did you have an idea for how you wanted to manufacture it to make it better and stand out?
I did.
Does that make sense?
But that's a stupid question, Dad.
No, that's a smart question.
No, it's not. It's stupid.
Why?
Yeah. You got to innovate. You got to create white space to have a successful business.
But I'm saying, I agree with you. I'm saying that, like, I don't know anything about, I'm not a skateboarder, but like any sport. I was just in a tennis store yesterday and I saw some woman come in that was so specific about the strings on like the racket.
Yeah.
And anyone like me would be like, what? It doesn't make a difference. But I think if you're really into any sport, every little aspect of it makes a huge difference, right? Including the trucks.
And look, it does.
Well, then I am stupid. I did. Yeah. I just think that as a 17-year-old boy, I think, how can I get a skateboard, or I'm going to make my own skateboard?
Yeah. Well, I already had my signature skateboard, right? So when you turn pro, you get your own Alien Workshop signature skateboard. So I had that. And then really, I looked at, like, what's my opportunity to create a business, right? And I couldn't create something that conflicted with the Alien Workshop and the boards. And I was sponsored by another truck company. And I looked at the opportunity to really, it was a marketing play over innovation play, where I had the five best skateboarders in the world. And then we all got pieces of the company. And then I put the whole thing together and built that company, the first company that I built.
What's amazing to me is, how did you get the five best skateboarders in the world to come follow you, who's 17 years old at the time? I'm sure they had other opportunities coming.
That's a stupid question.
That's a dumb question. Never mind. I'm going to shut that.
Because the five, and answer me if I'm right, the five best skateboarders are all around 17 years old. And if you say, let's get together, let's approach this company, and we can all own a piece of.
I love that every time we ask a question, we're both just answering for each other.
Can I be honest with you, Jackie? You're an idiot.
You're an idiot, Dad. All right, go on.
You guys are so lucky. You guys are so lucky.
So that you got this truck.
So again, look, it was, but you are correct. It was like, I was sort of the lead. I was like the business mind of the young skate culture. So it was sort of like they all believed in the ideas, and this went on for years, right? Even when I, you know, when I launched my professional skateboarding league, I basically built the NBA of skateboarding, and I signed every single one of the best skateboarders in the world to exclusive contracts and decimated the X Games and Do Tour and all the big tours in 1 week. And people couldn't understand, like, how that was possible. Like, how would these guys not sign them exclusively to not be in something as big as the X Games? But the truth is it's a very peer-led culture, and at the end of the day, like, anything that's by skater for skater is always going to get the skaters into it above anything else.
But didn't skaters say, well, I don't want to go against, it's like the WWE, you know, you don't want to.
Yeah, but there's nobody controlling it, you know, and it's why, if, believe it or not, in
the
that
X Games
era
are
too,
controlled, no?
They're no, owned. No, nobody cares. No skateboarders don't worry about any of that stuff. They would do, some of them would do, but not all of them. Like, when I started my league, the top 15 skateboarders on the earth, probably 4 or 5 skated in the X Games.
Tony Hawk did, right?
Yeah, but Tony wasn't a street skater. This was a street called Street League Skateboarding, so it was only street. So it was sort of, and it was a little bit like past his sort of time, you know what I mean?
Right.
This was in 2010.
So you, let's take it step by step, because I want to find out how you got that way. So the truck industry took off. That company did well.
It did okay. You know what I mean?
You still own it?
No, God forbid.
Why?
You know, I mean, it's still in business. You know, it's a testament to my ability to create a brand that lasts forever. But I'm, but like, it was too.
You should
patent
humbleness.
Yeah, it was. No, look, it's not. It was too small of an opportunity at the end of the day.
Did you sell it?
I did not. I eventually just like gave it back to the guys that the manufacturing partner that we had done the deal with, and that was that.
What was next?
And because really what had happened is I was given an opportunity to do a signature shoe for DC Shoes, like sort of an upstart footwear brand. And that's really what changed everything, because, you know, we were basically wearing Nikes when we didn't skate. And then we would have these kind of flat, dumpy skate shoes, right? And so DC's sort of vision was creating the world's first athletic skate shoes. And my first signature shoe, the Rob Dyrdek one, it exploded the company, right?
How'd you come up with that name?
You know what I mean? This wave of signature products, but it felt amazing. You know, you're 20 years old and now you have like, you're like Jordan, right? You have a signature shoe, but it really was the first, like that exploded. And then now,
when you say exploded, what kind of money do you make from having a signature shoe?
Yeah, I'm saying in that era, you know, I was making, you know, $200,000 or $300,000 a year, which was just
from the shoe.
Yeah. So I went from, you know, making $40,000-$50,000 to all of a sudden $300,000. And it was like, what? And then it's like, taxes, what?
Are you still driving the Honda?
Eventually I transitioned to the Audi. You know what I mean? And I bought a Rolex, right? I was really starting to like show my balling.
I don't know if a Honda's good in gas, but don't do what I did. I put diesel in my car because it's cheaper. Mm-hmm. It's not. They had to drain the gas tank. Mm-hmm. It costs so much more. So even though it's a cheaper price, mm-hmm. don't put diesel in your car like I did.
It's okay. A great lesson. It's a great lesson.
Who's here for the lesson?
So you launch your first shoe line. You're making $200,000 a year, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. Are you good at investing? Like, do you save it, or are you a spender?
Yeah, no, I was living check to check. Now, you know what I mean. It was just
even at $200,000.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't saving any money. I didn't understand money.
So what were you splurging on? What were you?
You know, like getting a nicer condo. You know, I bought my first house. Like, you know, I had a couple cars. Like, I didn't. And I really started like pushing like the envelope as creating businesses. I did record labels and skate
shops.
You
did a record label?
Yeah, like I was doing like all different types of random things. Because again, I was uneducated. I didn't understand money. I thought I knew it all. And then I just figured I would just keep starting more companies and do more things, and that I would eventually, one of these things would blow up and make me really rich, is really kind of like what I...
What's the first thing that you started that blew up?
None of them. Not one of them.
Well, something had to. You're here today.
Yeah, no, you know, I'm saying like I really didn't. I'm 47 years old.
Right.
I had made and lost millions and millions of dollars before I understood money. I don't think I really learned money till I was about 40.
7 years ago.
Yeah.
Did the record company, was there anything, did anything chart?
No, God forbid. It was all underground hip hop. And it was, you know, a DJ Gray Boy out of San Diego. He was the producer. We put out a couple albums. I funded the whole thing. Never made a dime back.
Okay.
I mean?
So now you're spending your money, you're living paycheck to paycheck.
Yep.
And then was the first thing that kind of, you got a TV show? Was that the first thing?
Yeah, the first thing I did to really make a lot of money, like, in that era, is I did a deal with DC Shoes to basically design footwear for them. And so the way their process would work is the designers would present to the sales team, and then the sales team would pick the shoes that they wanted to go into the line. So I made a deal with DC. I said, hey, let me be part of the design process, but if they pick my shoes, I just want a royalty of 2% on the shoes that get picked from my designs. And they were like, sure, why not? And so I would go into those sales meetings with the most like next level presentation and design and razzle dazzle the sales team. And at one point I had a third of the entire line. And so
wait, what is your background in designing? What do you know about design?
I don't know anything. I just taught myself to design shoes, right? And so then
you're
I
like
went through
Kanye West of skateboarding.
Yeah, so I really went through, but I mean at one point, you know, and then eventually Quiksilver came in and bought DC shoes, and they're like, why is one of the skaters getting $1.2 million in royalties, right? And they're like, oh, well, we let him like design shoes and give a royalty. And they, when they acquired the company, they deaded it, right? So
what you mean they killed it? They didn't, yeah. They didn't want you anymore.
Yeah, because they're like, the designer makes like 70 grand a year. We're paying Rob $1 million and he's not even a designer. And here's the part that's not fair is I would just go in and razzle dazzle. They would choose my shoe design, then I would give it to the designer who then had to go do the spec for it and go to China and do the entire thing and bring it back to me. Like the actual designer who I was competing with still had to do all the work.
Oh, so you didn't.
So you're just a salesman.
That's it. I was just.
So give me an example of how do you razzle dazzle somebody about a shoe? Like, what do you say?
I would go through and I'd create an entire thesis on the design, and then I would do full hand sketches and then put them in Illustrator and do all the colorways, and I'd do sort of a trend analysis. It was super sophisticated how I approached it. And then I would hit you with that razzle dazzle.
But what do you know about designing or even illustrating?
You know, I just taught myself all of it. And I think that's probably the deepest running theme throughout my life is I just, you know, constantly evolved and grew and taught myself all aspects of everything that I would get into.
Like, I wouldn't know how to put a shoe design on a laptop right now.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
You just, well, really,
was there an app?
I just asked how the designers were doing it and just sort of like they taught me like their process, you know what I mean?
And then you would go in and say, here's the idea. I want to.
Yeah, but I would go a little bit deeper in the sense of looking at like shoes that were trending in the market and how this was like an evolved version and how this innovation would be appealing to this group. Like I was pretty, like it was a lot of layers, dimension to the way that I would pitch it is why I sold so many.
So when they were bought, you're making $1.2 million a year from that.
Yeah.
And then they negate you. They fire you.
After they sold the company, but they gave me a payout as part of the acquisition of the company. And at that time, I had just sold Robin Big to MTV. And so I took the very best selling shoe and said, okay, you can take all of these. I want this and I want a 10% royalty because I'm about to be on TV. And then when it got on TV, when Robin Big hit MTV, like then everything, all my signature products exploded. But that shoe that I knew was already going to be a huge seller, then I made, you know, I was making $4-5 million a year off just that one.
Just the shoe.
Yeah.
What about the TV show? Was the TV show big? It's MTV. I don't think they pay huge.
Well, no, in the beginning I was getting like, you know, I don't know, 15 grand an episode, season one. That's, you know what I mean? Yeah, like you're not paying, like, especially back then, you're not paying like two first time random people.
But that was, and you, and it was at your, in your warehouse.
No, that one was in my house. Robin Big was at my house. And you got, and look, I saw what happened.
And who are the other guys?
It was just myself, Big Black, my cousin, and then two of Big Black's friends and our dog Meaty. You got to understand at that time, I saw what happened to Bam Margera's signature product. From being on Jackass, right? So it had just blown.
I don't know what happened with it.
It exploded. Like he was like selling more product than any other skateboarder there was without being necessarily like a top tier pro skater. So when I renegotiated, before the show launched, I renegotiated all of my deals for higher royalties and lower set fees.
Right.
And then I just made millions when the show exploded. I bet on myself that this platform would do it. So then, okay, I made millions off of my signature products when I did Fantasy Factory.
Which was your place. You bought a warehouse?
Which is my warehouse I had in downtown. They, at the time, then they're like, you know, we'll give you 125 grand an episode to either do a fourth season of Robin Big or your own show. So I wrote my own show and said the only way I would do it if I own the integrated marketing. So then I now own the platform. So then I sold millions and millions of dollars of deals to Microsoft and Chevy and Monster and DC and everybody.
Wait, the sales department gave you the integration?
Because they didn't, it was still a little early. They didn't, it was still this gray area where nobody, it was before sort of Bethany Frankel's like Skinny Girl and like the Jersey Shore came out and all them. It was right before all that. So I was able to own it contractually. So I was now selling my own airtime for millions of dollars that MTV had no control over.
Right, and but that you didn't get pushback from the sales department at MTV.
They couldn't because I own the rights. I wouldn't do that. It was in contractually I own the rights.
But say I'm just throwing out a name. Say Ford. You got a deal with Ford, and
I did a deal with Chevy.
Okay,
I was the only person ever to flip a car, barrel roll car, ramp to ramp on a front wheel drive car. It was for the season premiere of season 3 of Fantasy Factory and a Super Bowl commercial, and I sold all of that directly to Chevy.
And they paid you. Right. What I'm saying is, at the network, the sales department, then does that not close the door to them to Ford? You know, does Ford want to have a commercial on a show that is flipping a Chevy?
No.
Right. So you're tying the hands of the sales department, and the whole way that a network makes money is by selling advertising.
Correct.
So they kind of changed the rule because you can't do that anymore. They own the integration. So they changed the rules because of you.
Yeah, I'm saying like I was the last person to slip it in there because they were like, the way I did the contract too is like, if it was integrated into the story of the show and that I had 100% approval of the integration of the story into the show. And so, but I also said, hey, if you guys want me to create a show for something, we can do that too. So they were like, all right, it felt like a give and take, only unless they would come to me with someone, unless they wanted to pay me on the side, I would say no, not do it. I would only do deals with people that paid me first, and then if they wanted to do a deal with the network second, they could do that, you know.
Wow, so you probably made a fortune on that show.
I did.
Why'd you stop doing the show?
Oh, I mean, I was getting attacked by tigers and getting towed into waves and breaking world records, jumping cars backwards. It was like so stunt intensive and it would take me 6 months to shoot 10 episodes where it takes me, a few hours to shoot 6 episodes today for something like Ridiculousness, you know.
So you just felt like, you ended it, not the network.
Yeah, well, I mean, initially I ended it. We had our season finale, and then part of like an extended deal for Ridiculousness at that time, they said they would give me like a guaranteed pickup of like 60 episodes if I'd commit to another season of Fantasy Factory. So it was
Ridiculousness was going at the same time.
Yeah, so Ridiculousness, yeah, they were now they, I was doing both of them at the same time, because I actually sold them both at the exact same time.
They bought two shows from you at one time.
Yeah, because originally I read the article like in 2007 of Vinny DeBona's $500 million global syndication of America's Funniest Home Videos, and was like, man, like I need to make that. I should just make the cool version of America's Funniest Home Videos. And I took a 1-hour episode of America's Funniest Home Videos, stripped it down to just the good videos, made a little compilation and just had like my Xbox controller and went in and did the show almost exactly how I do the show, of like trying to show that, hey, there's like a opportunity for this type of content at a much higher, cooler pace. And so they picked them up both at the same time, but they would only pay me $30,000 for Ridiculousness, and they were going to give me $125,000 per episode for Fantasy Factory. And I just didn't want to do them both at the exact same time. So once we shot the first season of Fantasy Factory, then we shot Ridiculousness after that.
And now, you know, Ridiculousness has become, I think that's the network. It's the Ridiculousness.
It's Catfish and Ridiculousness all the time. All day.
And I was lucky enough, you invited me on, and I went there. And I got to say that I was blown away by the well-oiled machine. As he said on the last time that, you know, as many episodes as you do, he told us, you shared that it's like 4% of your time.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah. So I went in, I walked right onto the set. They said, roll. I was out of there. It's a half-hour show, is it?
Yep.
I think I was out of there in 40 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that day it was 31, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, maybe 31.
I time all of them, you know what I mean? But boy, what an amazing guest you were, man. I can't thank you enough.
I was wonderful.
You were amazing.
I was just thinking about how good I was.
Look at us, two humble guys getting together.
No, I mean, have you ever had a guest like me? I am fucking brilliant.
Man, look. Certainly, not even joking, one of the best guests, without a doubt.
So why didn't you ask me back?
Well, didn't we just shoot like a couple of weeks ago? But look, I will be, I want you to know emotionally, when I came out singing, you don't know my name, I don't play by the rules of the game. And you were like, bah! I thought you were giving me the golden buzzer. For real. And yeah. I was like, you gave me the golden buzzer just like Grace. And you were like, oh no, like that was terrible. You know what I mean? It hurt me.
I'm sorry.
It hurt me.
I'm sorry. Yeah,
I thought, what made him a good guest? If he hurt your feelings?
Well, most guests won't hurt him. He feels nothing. I think 90% of the time when you're doing the show, you're just a numb, empty vessel of humanity.
That's it.
And then I just push the button. So, okay. So now you also have like, other businesses and other like and your family is just stunning. How did you meet your wife?
Twitter.
No, you didn't.
Yeah.
Really? Did she slide into your?
Are you saying Twitter in. Or are you saying Tinder?
Twitter. Yeah, it was before Tinder. You know what I mean.
How do you meet somebody on? You slid into her DM.
I did.
But how do you even see? People don't really put pictures on Twitter.
This was like before Instagram. You know what I mean? That month she was like Miss September and Playboy in 2013. And I just followed her actually. Like I didn't even like.
Wait. But because of.
That's right. I'm like this.
Playboy.
This is who I'm meant to be with. I'm not even kidding.
You bought the magazine?
Miss September?
Yeah. Like that's how like. And the truth of the story was I woke up that morning and was like, I am meant to marry a playmate. And I'm like, okay, who are the latest playmates? And then she was September of that month. And I swear to God, I just was like, this is who I'm meant to marry. And I just followed her. She screenshot it and said, hello, new friend. And it's like, whoa, what are we doing here? You know what I mean? And then like in her sort of profile, like it was her dream to swim with sharks and pet a tiger. And I'm like, I think this is amazing because I've been attacked by both.
Wow.
I could probably be your life coach. And then, then as I'm it goes to texting, right?
Right.
And then I'm like, it's time to set a date. You know, I'm like, do you want
to set a date?
You know, like, let's meet. We never talked on the phone.
To meet.
And so I'm like, you want to get together on Friday? She's like, what do you want to do? I looked through like her, like all of her posts, and she was posting about like a kennel in like Riverside that was going to euthanize all the dogs. And I'm like, Riverside's like 2.5 hours from here. I said, why don't we get a helicopter and go to Riverside and rescue some puppies?
And
a half hour later, she's like, sure. And I'm like, what?
See, Alex, my son is listening and he's got signal.
He's like, that's his next date.
Look, so then I had to get a helicopter and I never even talked to her on the phone, right? It was like an episode of Catfish. It was like, man, is this like a double episode?
But you had the magazine. You had the Playboy
But
magazine.
I don't know. I mean, you never know. You know what I mean? Right. Like
all in September you did this?
Yeah, this is all in a week's time. So I'm driving to go pick her up and I'm like, the week I'm going in, she posts about Dayton, Ohio. And I'm like, what do you have connected to Dayton, Ohio, where I'm born and raised?
I thought she was talking about you. I'm dating Ohio.
No, and she's like, that's where my entire mom's family's from. My mom lives there with my brother right now. And I'm like, oh my God, this is destiny. Right. So I've always had this like feeling that I was meant to marry someone connected to Hawaii, right? Don't know why.
Hawaii,
right? This really random.
How are we getting from Ohio?
Look, I don't know. So I'm going to pick her up, right? I still haven't talked to her on the phone. And I'm like, I got a helicopter waiting in Van Nuys, a block from here. I'm like, going to pick her up. I'm like, don't even care about Hawaii. Why are you even thinking this? What does that even mean? Why is this even inside you? This is so random. Say hello, super awkward. She gets in my fancy, I pick her up in the Ferrari, trying to be like, this is how we roll out here. We're going to get the helicopter. She sits down. I don't even have 10 seconds of conversation. I asked, do you have any connection to Hawaii? And she's like, I'm I guess my sister lives there with my grandparents right now. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty solid. That's solid. Enough. So I'm like, well, let's have for children. Sure, this is who I'm meant to marry. So then we're up in this helicopter. And then she begins to tell me a story that she is that she was like diagnosed with a rare blood disease called aplastianemia, and that she was given 6 months to live when she was 10, and that all she wanted to do was swim with dolphins, and she went and make a wish granted her wish to go swim with dolphins, and she went and swam with dolphins in Hawaii. And when she swam with the dolphins, she told herself that she wasn't going to let herself die, and that she was going to experience things like this forever. And man, I could have shed a tear on the spot. And I'm like, this is my wife. You know what I mean? And literally from like that point forward, like I have just had this extraordinary, amazing, incredible existence.
How long before you got married from that date?
Oh, like a year, year and a half.
So September again.
Yeah, I got married in September. Got married September 19th.
Did you really?
Yeah.
And now you have two kids.
Two amazing kids, you know, and
most people, when they say, who are you meant to marry? It's like, oh, I want someone who's funny. I want someone. You just were looking for a connection to
Hawaii.
That's a playmate.
I don't even have any idea.
Look how beautiful she is.
Oh, like, that's why. It didn't have anything to do with Hawaii and her being a playmate. It was because you saw her and she's gorgeous.
Oh, but
she wants to rescue puppies.
Can you go to her Instagram? No, go to my Instagram.
You look better too, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you,
next
double
to
babies.
Her, you look fantastic.
Does it bother you at all? No jealousy that she is in Playboy, and other people who are now listening to this are downloading Playboy pictures of your wife?
I mean, maybe. Look over here to the right here.
To the right?
Look at this.
Oh, she's stunning.
This is on Saturday. She just won Mrs. Queen of the World this weekend. Can you go to the video? Slide over to the video so you can see, like,
let's see this.
So look, like, and here's
play
it
the
is.
Audio.
Nah.
We can't.
Our first runner-up. Mrs.
Yeah.
New York.
Yeah!
So you're married to the queen of the world?
That's it. That's
She's
it.
She's stunning.
Flew the whole family out
Where
there.
Where was that? Where is the queen of the world pageant held?
Morristown, New Jersey. Morristown, New Jersey.
The center of the world.
That's it. And what an extraordinary experience.
Look how happy your daughter looks.
they're in the chaos.
Can I go home?
Her mommy's a princess.
Oh, and look at you with the white suit on.
Matching with the sun, we went out and we did it big. Flew straight into Morristown, rented a Chrysler Pacifica, drove straight up the tarmac to the hotel. It was an extraordinary weekend.
So as the queen of the world.
Brought Pat and Jean out there, my parents and my sisters there, brought everybody.
That's fantastic.
Because this is what it's about, experiencing life, you know what I mean?
What is the duty of the queen of the world? Like, what is her, does she travel
well,
the world?
Well, ask her reign.
Yeah.
I don't know. She's going to have to do a bunch of stuff. I don't know. It's great.
And you said you showed up this morning. You said you'd had a rough night. Is your kid not feeling well?
No, because we flew back yesterday and, you know, just keep him, like, locked in. We just feed him full of snacks and iPad, which he doesn't get when he's at home normally. So, you know, in the middle of this morning when he was, like, screaming, Dada, Mama, I feel sick. And he was throwing up a little bit. And then he's like, why are you up so early?
We're germaphobes.
Oh, sorry.
Is it
you just came from hanging out with a kid that's vomiting.
He's okay, though, bowling, right? It was just because of snacks.
Yeah, he's fine.
Does that make you king of the world, by the way?
Actually, it makes me Mr. Queen of the world.
Mr. Queen of the world.
No, I'm just kidding. I don't know.
I know you're just
better,
kidding.
It's got a better ring to it.
So what is next for Rob? What is, like, you seem to be on this path and you have this energy of just moving forward and reinventing. So do you have your sights set on something? And can I be a partner?
I mean, look, you know, it's like I'm constantly evolving and growing. I like to think that I systematically evolve. I'm growing and evolving with a clear and deep purpose. And a lot of that has to do with if financial growth and business growth, you know, and I think for me, it's sort of a really sophisticated way at curating ideas and entrepreneurs and then building them and funding them to profitability that then gives you the flexibility to scale and either be acquired or continue to reap the rewards of building a successful, profitable company. How do I do that over and over? And now it's a matter of, you know, building the right businesses and then capitalizing them in the right way with the right founders, the right timing, right market, and just do that over and over again.
Is there something right now that you've funded or that you're excited about that we don't know about yet?
Nothing. Everything that I have is in market right now. You know, I have MindRight, Good Mood, Superfood. I mean, Luso Cloud, I just did the $5 million Series A round of that one. I've put about $6 million. It's a footwear brand called, it's basically a comfort footwear brand, like essentially you know, what I'd call more versatile sort of ugly footwear, comfort footwear.
Why are you pointing at us?
Are we wearing ugly footwear?
You are.
Yeah.
You are.
We're comfort wearing Crocs.
Brand, you know what I mean? And so, but to give you an idea, between Crocs, Birkenstocks, and Uggs, that's $3.6 billion in revenue between just those three. So really what we set out to create was like, how can we make a more premium, just as ugly and comfortable and durable to capture some of that market share? But then we launched it with John Buscemi and a bunch of like super fashionable, cool footwear experts.
Is that in relation to Steve Buscemi?
It is not. I think they're distant cousins, but I don't think there's any direct relation.
Bob, how about Bob Buscemi?
Maybe Bob.
What shoes are you wearing today?
These are just good old-fashioned Nikes. You know what I mean? I wasn't prepared to come in so comfy as you guys.
So,
those are ugly shoes. Let me just say, they're so ugly, I'm glad they're on your feet. That's how ugly they are.
Mine? Are you looking at
both
me?
Both of them.
We love our Crocs.
So do you still consider yourself a skateboarder, or now do you see yourself more as like a businessman, entrepreneur?
I mean, look, I'm when you're a skateboarder, you're always a skateboarder, you know? But it's a... You know, I've had so many different lives. I mean, when you go from pro skateboarder to this level of TV... But like I said, I started my first company at 17. I started, you know, 13 different companies before I built the Deer Deck Machine, which is essentially a company that creates companies. And I've built 18 companies since launching it in 2016. So it's at my core, I'll always look at myself as more of an entrepreneur. And
you still
entrepreneur
skate?
First, skateboarder second. I don't really skate at all. You know, my son's on me tough. Like, why don't you skate? You know, he's 5.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, someday when he eventually wants to skate, I would skate with him. But I've been spending the last few years really fixing my body from all the damage that I did, from all the years of skateboarding and all the stunts that I did in Fantasy Factory. So I really wanted to, like, rebuild my body completely, so by the time my kids are older that I can spend the time running around with them without blowing a hammy.
Hamstring.
I got it. I know what a hammy is.
Well, you saw what happened to Tony Hawk recently.
Oh,
right?
No,
oh my
it's
God.
Tragic.
That is.
It's true. So, did that happen after he was in here?
Yeah.
I got to be careful.
Yeah. It's not us. Don't blame us. For those that don't know.
We talked about it a little bit last time you were in here, but you said you didn't finish school. So you didn't get all of this success from necessarily a traditional education. What advice would you give to your kids or other people that wanted to be
successful?
Well, I mean, to me, it's like what I instill is I'm trying to instill the joy of learning in my children, and that life's greatest gift is that you get to learn, evolve, and grow. And so even I taught him how to fix the toilet, you know, and he was like, I can't fix, I don't know how, he was all scared. And then like finally showed him until he finally could figure out how he could do it himself. And when he did it himself, he's like, oh yes, you know, and I'm like, you see that?
Does he have
That's
a card?
Learning.
Because I need...
Do you have a car?
Card.
Oh, your toilet's messed up?
Yeah.
His little hands could go to work for you quick. it's just, how do you just learn? How do you learn to love learning and look at it more from you can do anything in this life if you choose to learn it and grow into it. And everything's hard at first until you make it easy, right? And so to me, I'm living proof of like, the world that I've created and what I've grown into, that you can become anything if you put in the effort to learn it.
You know? I see you showed us the picture before. You have sisters. Is that
one sister? Yeah.
One sister. And your parents, are they gotta be blown away now. Like, yeah. I know you said it's funny that your mom said, why do you have to say you didn't finish school? And aren't you embarrassed yeah. about that? But they got to look at you and go, oh, my God.
Yeah. This look, is. Yeah. And it's funny because it's like, you know, since I, you know, my mom sent me a text message about, you know, I'm so thankful that, you know, I'm really proud, you know, like from being there this weekend with them. Because I try to include them in everything that we do.
They still in Ohio?
Yeah. So it's like. You know, it's just important for me to continue to have those experiences, and they are. I just think it's beyond the level, because you got to understand, even when, you know, probably 10 years ago I paid for my parents to retire, you know, and even then I had to pay one bit of money to down the center to pay for all the bills and then give them separate money.
Or they're not together.
No, they're together. But that's how, like, they didn't want to, like, I had to do it separately so that, like, my mom wouldn't complain that I'm going to keep working, then your dad needs to keep working. And I'm like, he doesn't want to work. He wants to golf, you know? So I had to negotiate with them, but.
Wait. How old are your parents?
Dad's 82, mom's 78.
What business was your dad in?
He sold suits.
Wow.
Suit salesman.
A suit salesman. And did your mom work?
She worked as, like, a. Like a secretary in like a doctor's office.
So when you say I want you to retire, how much money do you give somebody to retire?
Well, I bought them a house, gave them 200 G's, and then paid for like their and then just pay for their lives, you know. Then the same with my sister, I bought them a house.
Your sister married?
And then just pay for their lives, you know.
Wait, she retired?
No, she does real estate on the side, but I don't want my immediate family. I don't want them to ever think about money ever, you know. And anytime. You know, my sister will complain about something. I'll just, you know, send her 50 G's and be like, you know, build a pool, whatever.
My feet hurt.
He's going to complain. I knew that was coming.
You know, because, I mean, think about it.
Immediate like, family.
If you had an amazing brother,
yeah,
he would take care of those feet.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same, I just look at you.
My
you know,
brother owes me $9.
What about your wife's family?
You know, I would... do any and I have actually, you know, done some side giving to some people in her family, but I let it run through her on what she's willing to do,
because sometimes, you know, that can cause more friction than help.
And so I don't, again, I would never, I don't, you know, the way that our relationship is just, you know, deeply like wide open, and we have incredible communication and talk deeply about everything. So it's like, you know, it's at, I would do anything at any time for anyone that she would want.
Did you save a dog? Did you save a dog
we
on
did
the first
not.
Date?
We did not, unfortunately.
What? Yeah. What?
On the first date?
Yeah. Man, that's one of my life's great regrets.
You know? Then what did you do?
She was dogfished.
Yeah. She was.
You give a man a fish, Rob. You give a man a fish and they'll eat for a day. You give them a fishing pole and they'll say, how the fuck am I going to eat that?
Yeah. No, that's true. Sometimes.
How long
you know what I think we should do with Lou? You know, every time he says something or gives a little piece of advice, it should be like, the more you know, with like the star.
The less you know.
Yeah.
It should be the less you know.
Oh, man. The more you hear, the less you know.
The more you hear, the less you know. You got to do that. Jeremy will build it. You are an amazing guy. You really are. And you're really interesting. And you're... I think there's such a dichotomy between your public persona.
Yeah.
You know, I watch Ridiculousness because I love the funny clips, and you come off like a skateboard dude who was, you know, like one of the jackass guys. And then I talk to you and there's so much. It's very surprising. I don't know if that's didn't you find that? Like when you showed up, I didn't expect who you are. You also wrote a book. You're writing a book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is the book out?
No, it'll take me a couple years to do it, right? It's a philosophy that I want to stand the test of time, like Think and Grow Rich or The Science of Getting Rich or The Richest Man in Babylon, these sort of deeper philosophies that are fundamental that you could read over and over for hundreds of years and still be applicable.
I did also hear from my husband, who I think knows Chanel, West Coast, that you are just like the most giving person in the world, and that you really take care of not just your family but all your friends and people that you are really close with.
Was that a question?
It wasn't a question. I'm just saying. I did.
Stupid
it was
question.
A statement. It was a statement that I heard.
Look, whoever's closest to me is about to get 100 G's. But no, look, hey, if like,
but you gave me, her to, a career, and
yeah,
and,
yeah, but it's the, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, it's the greatest thing. You want to be able, I want to help as many people as I can in a direct and impactful way. You know what I mean? Like, as opposed to like being, you know, like doing charity work, if you will, like, you know, I just like impacting lives, and then the lives that are closest to me, I just don't want you to ever have to worry about money. Cause like,
is money the answer?
But it's not the, money's never the answer, but at the end of the day, if money kills your mind share and does not allow you to reflect and evolve and grow because you're constantly thinking or stressing about it, it's going to deteriorate your health, the quality of your life, and ultimately your existence. And so the people closest to me, if I can alleviate that stress so they can put energy into like basically personal fulfillment and relationship fulfillment, and the things that they can go out and spend that mind share that would have been stressing over money in something productive towards making them happy, I'd rather that happen. Doesn't necessarily mean they're not going to do that and not continue to fight other issues within themselves. But if I can alleviate that one, which is fundamental to living, to those closest to me, that's why I stay committed to that.
When I Google Rob Dyrdek's net worth, mm-hmm. it says 400 million. Are you that happy?
Look, let me tell you something about net worth and money, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you, it's still the balance sheet of your existence, right? So if you spend 100 grand a year and you have 20 million in the bank, you're going to be happy as a fiddle. You know what I mean? If you have $10 million in the bank and you spend $1 million a year, you're going to be stressing, right? And then for me, it goes even further to then the type of assets that your money lives in and your worth is based in. And because it really boils down to how much you spend, how much the way that you live and is connected to your identity, and then how much you have supports that, right? It's like whenever that becomes, you don't ever want to be trapped by needing to do more. You want to do more as in an effort to add to your legacy, your purpose, your passions, versus like needing to be able to maintain your lifestyle. So anybody, if they find success and don't keep those balance, they're going to get into trouble, you know, because then you're doing stuff you don't want to do for money versus like your money working for the lifestyle that you've created, you know.
Wow.
So what's your view for your kids and teaching them about money? So you never want them to have to worry about money, and so you're going to support them, provide for them, but isn't it important that they learn then how to like manage their money and still understand
Absolutely.
Finances
no,
and business?
No, I'm teaching. I mean, I already teach. We talk about everything. He like as it relates to building a company. He's 5 years old. He's like, I got a perfect idea for a company. it's a pizza with honey. And I'm like, son, that is genius. That's how you have to think, son. And I'm like, it's a big market share, but it's a unique sort of a look at the space. You could do your own thing. What would you call it? He's like, Delish Honey. And I'm like, man, that's actually a good name. And I went and bought delishhoney.com. It was available. And like, I'm like, man, like, and so to me, I will teach every single aspect of money, because it's like you still have to make a ton of decisions with money. Like, you know, for me, I like cash flowing real estate, right? I don't like owning public equities. I like investing in companies that I've started, I own, I totally understand. I like keeping a ton of cash. I keep 5 years of cash of my lifestyle expenses. And then I have almost all of my money in a non-correlated cash flowing real estate.
Right.
Right? Because of all the tax benefits and everything to boot. But my lifestyle is never compromised in that system, but that was the system I created, right? And so I want them, whether whatever they do growing up, you have to look at your life through the lens of whatever you earn is post-tax, right? And then your expenses, and then what are your goals? You got to set a goal with money. If you don't have a goal with money and what you're hoping to achieve with it, that is sort of your own personal financial freedom, then you just kind of spend your life making a little bit more, saving some money here without having a definitive pathway and end game, I think is just what most people don't ever take the time to design.
They don't. And I always say to people, like, they'll go, you know, people don't know what they can afford. You know, I want to buy a house. What do you think I can afford? And I'm always saying it's like fourth grade math. Yeah. You know, it really is. And people think there's more to it than there actually is. And there isn't.
Yeah.
And I don't think our school system, our education system, it doesn't teach what is important, what a mortgage is, what lending. As soon as you learn what a percentage is, you know, you should. They don't equate that to what we're going to use it in life for.
Yeah.
You know, even math and calculus, I don't know how I use that, whereas I can.
But almost nothing in school teaches you and prepares you for how to live a fulfilling, high quality life. You know, because at the end of the day, you have to learn, you know, sort of understanding yourself and the self-awareness to be able to even design the life that you want to eventually lead. Because it's like anything else. Like, if you don't design what happiness is for you, and create a pathway to get there, then you're just going to try all these little things, hoping one of them is the answer, when the answer is actually within you to design and then create the path to go and do it. And none of that thinking, and especially as it relates to financial sort of like education and what your career is for and how all these things will lead to giving you a balanced, happier life. I just think nothing in school teaches any of that stuff.
Robbie, you got to open up your own church of productivity in life. No, you're an amazing, aspirational, inspirational, good human being who I accidentally got to know. I've been a fan of yours for years, a fan of your television show for years. And now, you know, I think you're an amazing human being. And I can't thank you enough for being here and letting us talk to you and kind of I would imagine that listeners are going to listen to this over and over and over again. This is an episode that you need to listen to, and you need to listen to again, and you need to learn from. And that's what I'm very proud that you were on here and you kind of expounded on our, you know, a podcast, because I'm going to tell people and every day people go, I've got investments or I want to do things. I'll go listen to the Rob Drydick episode.
Dear Dick.
We can show that picture again, but you're amazing. I would love to, in some way, you know, think of me. If you need investors in something, or I can be
If you need someone to razzle dazzle people for you, you know who to call. Dad.
I love selling. I love everything you're talking
about.
You got
a shoe to sell. Yeah. I'm your guy.
Well, look at that. You said I'm wearing ugly shoes. I actually love my Crocs.
I get it. You're committed.
You're committed.
The socks are ugly. I'm wearing white socks.
You're wearing ugly socks with ugly shoes. It's like a matching pair.
We're dressed exactly the same, Dad. We're both wearing sweats.
I thought it was a daily thing.
No. We came in today dressed badly, asking stupid questions. And thank you for being part of it. I want everybody to subscribe, to comment, to review, and watch Ridiculousness. What else can we plug?
If you love business, you can listen to my business podcast, Build with Rob. It's if you want to learn about how
I'm going to listen to it right after this.
Together. Yeah.
I can't wait. All right, wherever podcasts are available, thank you and good night.
Good night.